Hey everybody, this is Pierre Quinn, and you're listening to episode number 80 of the Leading Wild Grain podcast, where my mission is to help you live, learn, and lead with confidence. On this episode of the podcast, we are doing a leadership mashup. That's right, I'm highlighting some of the best interviews from the first 79 episodes. And man, we got a lot of stuff, a lot of gems, a lot of major keys, a lot of insights that maybe you didn't have a chance to listen to the episode, or maybe you just forgot how good it was. So I'm going to give you some snippets of some of my best interviews, and we're going to give you some leadership keys to help you make a greater difference in where you're called to live, serve, and work. So listen up. Okay, just want to give a shout out to every single one of you that continues to support this podcast. Your reviews on iTunes, your shares on social media, it's making a huge difference in our listenership. And I want to encourage you to continue to do so. So I want to highlight one of our recent reviews from the Clax Factor. And this is what the Clax Factor says. As an entrepreneur, ministry leader, and family man myself, this powerful podcast speaks to me on so many levels. Pierre has a God-given energy and passion that exudes through everything he does and empowers everyone within his sphere of influence. His uncanny ability to speak life into your own from a practical level will resonate even with listeners who aren't believers, but simply want to achieve personal goals, combat complacency, up their leadership game, and make a difference in this world. I've been so impressed binge listening to these podcasts on my Android phone. Why do you have to put that in there? Okay, just joking. I've been so impressed binge listening to these podcasts on my Android phone while driving that I signed up for an iTunes account. A tedious, even disdainful process for PC users like myself who abhor just about everything Apple. Look, Clax Factor, we give you a pass for that. All right. And he did that just so he could leave this review. Thanks, Pierre, for your transparency, clarity, and dedication to share your talents to build up others. And I pray that the blessing you have been to so many individuals is returned to you and your family 100-fold. The Clax Factor, team, whoever helps me put this stuff together, and I greatly appreciate that review. That's the type of review that I'm talking about. Shouts out to the Clax Factor for that review. And I want to encourage you, even if you're a PC user, even if you're like the Clax Factor and you got to sign up for iTunes just to leave a review, hey, do it. It's encouraging other people to check out the Leading Wild Grain podcast and to put them in touch with insights and perspectives and information that's going to help them grow in all aspects of their life. So for this episode of the podcast, I'm highlighting a conversation from episode number 41 with Ron Carucci. Now, Ron Carucci leads an organization called Navalent, and he spent 25 years working alongside CEOs and senior executives from everything from Fortune 50 to startups. And we have a great conversation, a challenging conversation about why leaders fail. So I'm just going to give you a snippet of that conversation with Ron Carucci. Listen up.
Leaders maybe who have tons of potential, a good track record, but then they ascend to a certain position and then the failure rate kind of increases. Now, how does that play, and how does that the relationship element, the networking element, the preparedness element play into the part of your research that suggests that within the first 18 months, half of the leaders that transition to seats of influence are failing, calling for help?
You know, I wish more would call for help sooner. You heard the story that research began with a phone call I got from a young, very promising leader who had taken on a bigger position after one of our transformational efforts. And by all accounts, this kid was going to go the distance. You know, smart, sharp, talented, disciplined, so likable, deeply credible, you know, authentic, and a lot of integrity. It was everything you wanted in an emerging leader. And when he called me 9 months into his assignment, telling me he'd been fired, it was like a what? And then his CEO called me a couple hours later saying, hey, we had to let him go. And then inferred, well, it's kind of your fault because you were supposed to go coach him and get him ready and you didn't. And that was like a wrecking ball hitting me in the head, because that's the last thing anybody ever wants to hear, is that you contributed to somebody's demise. So I said, can we come investigate? I need to understand what happened here. How we could not have misjudged him that badly. How could he go from being this promising rising star to being a complete dodo in 9 months? That can't be the story we tell here. That's not what happened. And so that investigation is what led to our 10-year study to find out, why is it that we have so readily accepted this failure rate? And it's, you know, Pierre, it's a wonder any of them are succeeding. When you look at the landmines communities and organizations put in their way, when you see what obstacles they are not even prepared for are there, that you wonder any of them can rise above all that and succeed. A lot of it's preparation work, but a lot of it's over-preparation. So, for example, we ask people in interviews, we say to them, look, and you know, what's the least reliable device we know we shouldn't use for selection? The resume. What's the device we're using most for selection? The resume. And we'll look at it and we'll say things like, oh my gosh, look at this great, all these great departments you've led. That's what we need here in our sales department. Or, wow, you built all these great brands. That's what we need. Or, wow, you've built 4 apps before. We need apps. And we look at this track record and the message we send them is this. You have a formula. You have this recipe. We'd like you to bring that recipe here. And in that, we've said you can ignore context. We just want you to come rinse and repeat what you've already done. So I now think I've got a mandate. So I show up to this role feeling like I'm being watched, feeling like I've got to reproduce this success. So I reach back and I, rather than reaching for wisdom, I reach for a recipe. And I start applying the recipe to this in context. Well, of course, inevitably, it doesn't work, right? The community, the organization resists. I slap it harder. And then I get frustrated and I go to the hiring manager and tell me, you didn't tell me it was this bad. Or how have you made any money? Or how has this worked this way for so long? Now my diagnosis has become an indictment. And everybody knows that and they feel judged by me. So what do they begin to do? Back away. And now I don't even realize I'm being isolated. And in my opening move of taking this mythical bait of a mandate, letting my diagnosis become an indictment, then the halo effect that I have when I came in, now the halo becomes a noose. And they're going to hang me with it. And I don't even know what's happening. That's just a few of them here. We found several dozen of those kinds of landmines in the way, baked into the very processes we use to appoint leaders and identify them for opportunities. And there were dozens more. And those are the things people have to sidestep around in order to rise up, stick the landing, and thrive in broader positions of leadership. Then there's the things it takes to be successful. But you might not even get to demonstrate those. If you can't get past all the landmines that are in the way in the process of just getting the job.
What's the pushback been like in organizations that you work with, maybe some with high turnover rate in executive positions, and you say, okay, here's how I see it. Something's wrong with our process. Something's wrong with how we transition people to leadership, how we do talent acquisition. Like, our system and culture is wrong. What's the pushback? What's the pushback been like?
People are like, yes, we agree.
Wow. Okay.
Okay, but now we have to change it. Oh. They're not going to let me do that.
Great conversation with Ron Carucci. I know I cut it off right before he was about to drop some major insights about these 4 qualities, characteristics of effective leaders. That's why you need to go back and listen to episode number 41. Now, here's a snippet from episode number 63. Episode 63 features my hometown weatherman. Growing up, I watched Chuck Gatica on TV in Detroit. And the title of this episode is Journey Strong. We talk about why Chuck left his job as a broadcaster and found time to go back to study for a master's degree at age 50 and rediscover what his life's purpose was. And now he's on this journey of helping other people discover what the rest of their life looks like, what significance in the rest of their life looks like. So here's my conversation with Chuck Gatica.
Ministry and leadership. So part of my master's is in leadership. I've always been a student of leadership. I lived and studied in the Holy Land for a month, and that was while I was still doing full-time news. Mm. So I come out of that 4 years later, and I left TV news at 56, and I put on I went on staff at a large mega church here in the Detroit area. Mm-hmm. And I thought that's where God was leading me. And I think there are reasons for all of this path that I've been on. But while I'm there, I put on a baby boomer conference. Admittedly, it was for people who were about 50 to 65. You know,
nice.
We get 900 people. I mean, there is a fire wow. out there. And it's not just boomers. I had a guy who's 35 who walked up to me, said, Chuck, I'm a firefighter. I started when I was 21, 22 years old. I've been carrying 100 pounds of gear up and down ladders my whole career. I can't do it anymore. I'm 35 and I have to reinvent myself. So this is not just about, you know, guys like me who are old. So I put on this thing and I invited a speaker from the Halftime Institute. This is a book that was written by Bob Buford, who just sadly passed away this year. I was in Dallas at the Institute the day after he passed. He wrote this book called Halftime, Moving Your Life from Success to Significance. Hmm. And while there's a lot to that book, I have to tell you, it spoke to me right away, and it speaks to a lot of people. Whatever success is, it doesn't mean you're a retired football player or weather guy or whatever it is. Whatever success has been for you, what is significance? What can it be for you? And that's the motion that we should all be moving toward in our life, even if we continue to work. I'm not saying everybody should quit their job and go to work at a church. I'm just saying, what about where you're planted? What can you do? So I then wind up getting invited to the Halftime Institute. I decided to take them up on the offer of going out to Pepperdine University at Malibu. I mean, somebody had to go.
You know? Right.
And I don't know how kids go to school there, man. They walk out and they see the ocean every day. And so I'm there for 3 days, and I get the certificate in second half significance, which I guess, you know, it's kind of ironic. I'm still trying to figure out my own, and I'm hopeful, I'm prayerful that if nothing else, I can be an encourager to others. Not so much a coach. I don't really do professional coaching, but I sit with guys I know, and we talk about this journey they're on. And if I can encourage people that, yeah, you can come through it, and there are a few tricks to it, but yeah, you can do it. Everybody can.
So was your time at Pepperdine the catalyst for now this new platform and support that you have called Journey Strong? Give us a story of that and how was that developed?
So Journey Strong is really kind of the name or the brand, if you will. I don't have anything that I sell. I'm doing some podcasts. I just did one on health and wellness for Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan. It's still going on. And so I've got some things I'm doing, but I'm doing a lot of professional speaking, and I've spoken to a lot of financial planning groups, which is interesting to me. They wanted me more of a motivational message to move their clients toward considering what is your legacy, where do you want to give your money away? What breaks your heart? And that's part of the halftime journey, is trying to dig deep, and this is really hard stuff. What is your passion? What would you do, Pierre, for the rest of your life, even if you didn't get paid for it? So some people would say, well, I would work on human trafficking. I mean, that, you know, I would go dig wells in Africa. I love zoo animals. You know, whatever your thing is. And I think that's really hard. So part of that 3-day intensive at Pepperdine is creating a personal mission statement, trying to discover who you are, why you're wired the way you are, taking a strengths finder test. I think that's a $20 investment. You know, I have no skin in the game on that. I don't have any stock in them, but I think it helps to show you a little bit about how you're wired. And I'll bet a lot of people who could be listening have already taken that test at work, you know? And so what I did is I kind of pivoted again, and Journey Strong has become something where I'm working with groups of people. I've spoken this week to a major church conference. I've spoke to a non-church group of 800 or 900 60-year-olds and older in St. Clair Shores, Michigan. So I'm doing a lot of that kind of stuff, and that's what Journey Strong is. And maybe there'll be a radio segment, and you know, I'm working on all kinds of different ideas.
Now, we're both persons of faith. Can you share with us a time where, and maybe it was the transition period, and if not, a time or some times in your life where you really had to, you know, tightly embrace your faith, and that the hope that you had to get you through whatever difficult section of life you were enduring at the time.
Well, you know, it's still a journey, and I that's why I looked for that name for what I'm trying to explain to people, and the word journey popped up. It really is true. I'm not done, and it's still not completely together, even though my life is generally running at a pretty nice level with kids and our third grandchild. Yeah, I mean, all the stuff that you try to get the pieces in place. So I'm leading trips to Israel now, maybe once every year and a half or so, which is a joy. But this idea of faith to me is important because men and women like you and I who have a faith life also typically want to do good in the world. We're charged to do good things, right, biblically. And I ignored the advice of the book, Halftime, written by Bob Buford, and even my own personal coach. And here's what I want to say to that. I think we all want to do good, and sometimes people like me, I won't include you in this, think that the only way to save the world, quote-unquote, is to run into the church or ministry and go on staff somewhere. That's the only way to do it. And I learned a bit the hard way that maybe because I'm entrepreneurial or otherwise, I'm not quite wired to run at the speed or the dialed down speed sometimes. And I think that being on staff at a church for me was an eye-opening discovery. And so I just encourage people who are listening that whether you're new to faith, your faith life, whether you have strong faith life your entire lifetime, really consider that whatever your halftime moment is at age 40, 60, I've had people who are 70 plus, Pierre, who are saying to me, hey, I'm going to retire. I am scared to death. And I'm thinking, you know, that's a really interesting thing because if God blesses all of us with an extra 20, 30, 40 years of life after we retire now, not because you're wealthy, just because. What in the world? How much golf can you play?
That was just a snippet from my conversation with Chuck Gatica. And that's episode number 63 of the Leading While Green podcast. And you want to go back and check out episode 63. I'll leave the link in the show notes so you can check that out. Chuck Gatica was at the top of his game as a television broadcaster. I mean, he had won awards. He was at the top of his game, and he felt this nudge to pivot, and now he is focusing on not just for himself but for others, helping people understand what second half significance looks like. So you want to go back and soak up that entire conversation. Up next is a snippet from episode number 60. Episode number 60 features my conversation with Dr. Heather Day, who is a professor of communication at Andrews University. And in our conversation, we talk about communicating with today's generation and the power of storytelling to build relationships both personally and professionally. So here's my conversation. Well, at least a snippet of it with Dr. Heather Day.
And when we validate one another's experiences, you absolutely have created a safe space where you are 1000% going to increase productivity. That's just the way it works. We have to feel safe. I have to feel involved. I have to feel included. And I have to feel like the person next to me has my back and cares. That takes time. Mm-hmm. We can't do that. And the average attention span today is 8 seconds. We can't do that in 8 seconds. Right? Studies show that if a YouTube video doesn't load, if it has a 2 second delay, I X out of the video.
Yep.
So we have an entire generation that says that they don't feel connected. This generation, by the way, is 10 points lonelier than even senior citizens. We have an entire generation that ghosts, deletes, is quick to edit and just quit and on to the next. If I don't feel immediately, and we have a fear of rejection, if I don't feel immediately included, these things, you have to just tell yourself, I tell my students all the time, this is a journey. Mm-hmm. There's a mountain and you have to climb it. But it is going to be so rewarding when you get to the top. But you have to tell yourself, I am committed to this journey and it's not going to happen in 8 seconds.
Well, let's talk about that getting adapted to culture, this idea of facing loneliness and rejection and transitioning to an academic environment. You know, each academic institution has its own unique culture. So how did you navigate that at the small community college, at the university level, trying to fit in or adjust, maybe a better word, to the academic culture?
Right. I mean, I think the best way to adjust to whatever culture you're in is to really take time to understand the people who are around you. So for example, in my situation, like I told you, I started a thing where I would meet with students on Saturday mornings at my other college that I was at. Here at Andrews, I have breakfast on Thursdays with whoever wants to come. So on Thursday mornings, I tell them the mantra in the communications department should be nobody has to eat alone. Unless, right? Nobody should have to walk into that cafeteria and say, I don't know anybody here. And I'm so uncomfortable and I feel fear right now, right? So I want you to look across that cafeteria and say, oh, there's Mrs. Day. And I can always, there's always a seat at Mrs. Day's table. And when we create those spaces to experience one another, I can't tell you, like I've had students tell me how lonely their college experience has been until we started doing these Thursday morning breakfasts, right? And symbolic convergence theory says that as when we have things like a breakfast, we share stories, of course, because so much of how we relay information is in story inherently. And those stories create fantasy chains that create community. And so that's what we do. And so it's a tiny adjustment, but again, it takes time. I have to commit that I'm going to leave my family and my kids on Thursday morning and go have breakfast with somebody else's kids. Right. I have to do that legwork and put in that time. And it has changed everything though. It changes the way they learn in my classroom because I'm not just a professor. I'm also the person who I can go, I can also sit and have breakfast with her and talk to her about my relationship that's ending. Mm-hmm. How do you think that would change the way a student would learn? Remember, the goal is always in human interaction to reduce uncertainty and to reduce fear. And so the more I feel connected to that person, the more safe I feel, and the more I am able to focus and be productive on the actual tasks that are available to me, like learning in a classroom.
Now, beside the spoken word, another way to communicate our stories is through the written word. And you're emerging into a pretty prolific author. How has writing impacted your journey and the journey of those around you?
I'm still learning. I think like my mom just said to me the other day, I just got a new book publication. I just published my sixth book over the summer. And there's a lot of really personal things in there. Cause a lot of times when you're sitting and you're writing, of course, with technology, we don't always think about the fact that, you know, thousands of people are going to read this. And my mom's like, is your husband okay with you sharing some of this information that you're sharing? I can't tell you how many times I'll be like picking up my kids from daycare or just at a gas station and somebody will come up and say, oh, did you write this book? And so, and this person who I don't know, know about my engagement that I ended 2 months before the wedding. So they know intimate details about me that I, you know, so we skip some steps there. And I think those of us who are interested in writing, you have to be prepared to jump through, you know, the relational development cycle pretty quickly. Because other people are far ahead of where you might be as you interact with them. And that's just a really unique experience that I think writers and bloggers and YouTube people and podcasts, that's a unique experience that content creators go through as they start to meet people who are, you know, using the content that they're creating.
So if I'm listening to this podcast, maybe I have an interview coming up or maybe I have a project, maybe a big presentation, and I'm trying to get a better handle on telling my own personal story and weaving in that those narratives, those fabrics of who I am. What are some tips that you have on telling a powerful personal story?
Yeah, I think especially for an interview, it's important to understand the relational development cycle, which says, of course, it should be reciprocal. So I shouldn't share too intimate of details too quickly if you have not shared those details with me. It creates an imbalance of power and it makes things kind of uncomfortable. However, I can still use the power of story in small ways. So for example, I had a student for that story speech that got up and shared with the class that he was in Little League. And I don't remember what happened. He like got hit by the ball in the face and he was like, I don't want to do this. And he goes up to his dad and he's like, I quit. I don't want to do Little League. And his dad looked at him and he said, no, we are not quitters. You're going to finish it. And so he finished that little semester or whatever that he had to do Little League. And he remembered that as he went through college, you know, there are going to be times that I want to quit, but I'm a, whatever his last name is, I'm a Ferguson and we don't quit, right? So that tiny little story, you could share in an interview. And I've not shared with you anything intimate about myself, but you will feel like I have because absolutely. Of the hormone release that your body innately goes through just by listening to me tell you a story.
Incredible conversation with Dr. Heather Day on episode 60. and you want to go back and listen to it, Dr. Day has some pretty amazing stuff, and her research on communication and relationships is really dynamic, and you want to follow up with her. I'll put the link to the full conversation in the show notes. Okay, for my last snippet, for my last featured conversation, I'm digging in the archives and going all the way back to episode number 43. On episode number 43, I had the chance to interview Chris Daniel. Now, Chris Daniel had trained more than 30,000 adult learners across the US and the UK. He had worked with companies like Boeing, the Steve Harvey Foundation, the Carolina Panthers, and he was part of the team that worked with Eric Thomas and associates to train entrepreneurs and leaders around the country. Now, sadly, Chris Daniel passed on September 16th, 2018, and I had the privilege of interviewing him just a couple of months before he passed to talk about his journey. He has an incredible journey. And to talk about this tool that he has in helping leaders and entrepreneurs discover their personality and using and leveraging that personality, what they discover about themselves, to be the best version of themselves. Man, it's a powerful conversation. I'm only going to give you a snippet of it, but I want you to go back and check out episode number 43 with Chris Daniel. Here's a snippet from that conversation.
My son took his life in 2015. Bro, that was a hard. So imagine all this other stuff. He's in the military in Kuwait. I just talked to him like 2 days before. Then I get that knock at the door, looking out military officers. I'm like, they recruiting somebody. Like, they had the wrong apartment. By that time, I got on my feet. I got my apartment, got out of extended stay. I was living in Crofton. And my son took his life. And bro, that was the hardest thing I ever had to do, because here's the deal. My son took his life. My sister was in the hospital in Annapolis. My mom had to fly here. I had to fly to Georgia for the funeral and bury my son. So all of that. And about a month after that, I got another one of those anonymous calls. Hey, we got 20 people for a PMP boot camp. We heard you're the guy. Right? So again, kept pulling me toward what I said, what he showed me.
Yeah.
And yeah, man, I had told CJ while working with him, hey, I got this other little training that I do. It ain't got nothing to do with PMP, but it's a fun interactive. Like, people rave about it. I don't know if we can fit that in. And CJ being CJ was like, yeah, we'll get to it. And so that was that. Like, I never pressed it. We were on PMP. And in 2017, he said, yeah, we're going to put this event on called P7D in Atlanta, and I want you to share your story. And I was like, on stage with ET? He was like, yeah. And I was like, okay. He's like, just give him about 30, 45 minutes. I was like, okay, cool, no problem. I'm a trainer. I talk for a living.
Yeah, yeah.
Bruh, when I tell you, and CJ's so masterful, didn't give me any direction. He's like, yeah, just do your thing. I'm like, okay, that's like five things, CJ. Like, which one you want me to? Because PMP, this ain't really the PMP crowd. He's like, no, no, just, you know, you got the mic, do what you do. So April 2017 was the first time I showed them the four animals training. Mm-hmm. And I kicked the conference off, 200 people in Atlanta at the W. I didn't know what I was getting into, but I'm like, yo, I'm sharing the stage with Eric Thomas. I'm going to give it 120%, whatever. I never knew that a year and a half ago, I would be sitting here now on tour with them speaking. I never pursued it. I never asked them to do it. But it's amazing now that people are here. Like, I keep hearing ET talk about this gorilla stuff. Like, what is that? And I'm like, man, like, that's what you were preparing me for. You know what I'm saying? So, and that's how the four animal stuff was born, man. So I've since then, you know, at that conference, that's where Carolina Panthers came from. That one of the coaches was at that conference. Just so many clients were birthed from that, and man, all the speaking that I do now with them. So that's been it, man. It's been an amazing ride. You know, I'm certifying a small handful of people to facilitate it and use it in their business and their talks. And yeah, man, we just going next level. Like, never forget what he showed you, you know?
So if people who, okay, hear about this four animals, yeah, man, kind of tease it out a little bit, because I want to send people to your social media, to your website, to everything. Yep. I want them to download the book. I want them to do everything. Why do we need to, as young leaders, as emerging leaders, why do we need to take this assessment? And what is this assessment about?
Yeah, so I've remixed it so many times, but it truly is the closest assessment to authenticity that I've ever seen, meaning understanding who you are. A lot of us, we take on these labels that people give us over time, right? So, you know, oh, you're a great pastor, or you're a great leader, or you're turning into an awesome supervisor or manager, right? And then we take that stuff and we accept it, and it could be true, but it's only half truth. What if you figured out exactly how you think, behave, communicate, and operate? Like, what I'm talking about, not a tool that'll tell you INTP or ESTJ. I'm talking about customized to you based on some questions that you answer. So I took this assessment probably 12 years ago for the first time, and I was like, yo, this is crazy how close this thing knows me. And then I later, when it got certified in about 10 years ago, and then I started teaching it about 8 years ago to just different leadership groups. Mm-hmm. And every time people would be like, yo, like, how can I get, that's crazy. How can I get it for my team? So when I presented it with ET and the squad, I knew, I was like, I got it in the corporate space. I want to see if it works in the entrepreneur space. And we've been kind of testing that over the last year. So it is the one tool that tells you how you naturally behave, how you adapt when you're pissed off, your core strengths, how you communicate when you pissed off, what people should say to you, what they shouldn't say to you. It really sculpts who you are in black and white. So then you can take that and go to the next level in your own way. Mm-hmm. Not some off the shelf canned way, but in your own customized way. Cause we think, a lot of times we think we got to become something else. No, absolutely. You just got to become 100% you. So that's the tool, man. When I show ET, he literally called me the day after Christmas, 2016. Was like, yo, bruh, like, I've taken assessments. Now we talking PhD. Bruh, I've taken assessments before, but this thing is crazy. Like, we need this. And that's my fit, man. So we've been rocking and rolling ever since. I've been blessed, man, to really, I was in Boston 2 weeks ago speaking with them. We've been going city to city with this Take Control tour, man, and just pointing people to it, foranimalsassessment.com. And it really, you can see the interview ET and I did. You can learn all about it and the other people who have taken it and gave me testimonials. And then, like I said, it's always optional, man. When people are ready, it's there.
Great conversation with Chris Daniel. Man, a little sad to hear his voice again, knowing that he passed in September of 2018. I interviewed him a few months before his passing. But Chris was on his way doing some life transforming work in the area of assessments and leadership and entrepreneurship. So check out that episode. Check out episode number 43 of the Leading While Green podcast. And I'll put the link to that conversation in the show notes. And the Four Animals assessment work is still out there if you're interested, if your interest was piqued from the snippet of the conversation with Chris. And there are some other individuals who are currently still training and still teaching people how to go through this assessment. So those are the four conversations, the snippets of four conversations that I want to share with you. And I just want to encourage each and every one of you who listen to this podcast to keep going. Listen, this started off as a challenge to really hack my personal leadership development by having conversations with leaders and influencers from around the country who are doing some amazing things. And I picked up the phone. I sent an email. I called as I was building myself and building my platform. And I found people who are willing to sit down for 30 or 40 minutes with me and talk to me about their project, their life, their leadership journey. So I want to let you know that people are listening to what you're doing. They're taking stock of what you're doing. And don't worry about the individuals who won't pick up your work, who won't follow what you're doing, who won't support, who won't reach out, who won't connect. Those are not your audience. Your audience will find you, but you got to put something out there for them to find. You have to keep going. You have to keep working. You have to keep leading. You have to keep pushing. And everybody's journey is different. What these four snippets of conversation reveal to you is that everybody's journey is different. And if you continue to walk your journey, the path laid out for you, good things will come from it. That's all I got for this episode of the Leading While Green podcast. You know it's my mission to help you live, learn, and lead with confidence. So until next time, take care and God bless.